You are listening to Girl Speak, a podcast series all about art, history, and contemporary culture with a girl's eye view.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 126 of Girl Speak, First Girls, Recent Administrations. I'm Sophie Small, a junior girl with Girl Museum. Thanks for tuning in, streaming, or downloading us today. Girl Speak is produced by Girl Museum, the first and only museum in the world dedicated to celebrating girlhood. Girl Museum explores the art, history, and culture of girls around the world in the past and present. All of our programmes are volunteer-run and supported by listeners like you. Special thanks to our sisterhood patrons, Angela Mills, Christine Kearney, Christina Susan Martinez, Elizabeth Dillenberg, Erica Holt, Frances Helt, Hilary Rose, Mary Celeste Kearney, Michelle Taylor-Bucock, and Sophie. Visit us on the web at www.girlmuseum.org. Just like the previous episode, today's is all about first girls, the daughters and relatives of US presidents who take on life at the centre of politics. The language in this podcast is quite binary. I refer to girls and women because unfortunately we're yet to see any trans or non-binary people in the White House. Even these girls are often left out of the history books, but their role has been crucial to US political life, and it's still developing even now. Today we're going to focus on more recent administrations, from Helen Taft through to Ivanka and Tiffany Trump. We'll see how a developing world media and advances in feminism changed the nature of the role that earlier first girls had been able to play. But we'll also see the limitations of this often overlooked, unelected position in US politics. When we look at how this role has developed, its history poses questions for the future, and what part girls will have in shaping it. Helen Taft, though only 18 and enrolled in college when her father became president, spent much of his term in office at the White House. Her mother had suffered a stroke, and Helen helped her with the recovery of her speech and movement, as well as taking on hostess duties and supporting her father. In December 1910, she held her debutante ball at the White House. Before the end of his term, she was able to return to college, and after his presidency ended, she graduated with a bachelor's degree, began an extensive academic career, became an active suffragette, and married and had two daughters. As the only child of Harry and Bess Truman, Margaret Truman regularly accompanied her father on campaign trips and at political events throughout his presidency. She was, however, 21 when he became president, and within a year at the start of his term, she had graduated from George Washington University. She pursued a varied career as a soprano, TV personality, radio host, and novelist. She also married and had four children. Though only four when she moved into the White House, Caroline Kennedy also played an active role in her father's presidency. Her parents, John Fitzgerald and Jacqueline Kennedy, i.e. JFK and Jackie, had a stillborn daughter, Arabella, before having Caroline, their first son, John Jr., during the presidential campaign, and their youngest son, Patrick, who came prematurely in 1963 and did not survive. Nevertheless, Caroline had a comfortable life at the White House, seemingly unaffected by the spotlight. She received pets as gifts, a Yucatan pony from Vice President Lyndon B. Johnson, and a puppy from Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev. She attended kindergarten and had a nanny, Maud Shaw. Caroline spent a lot of time with her wider family and rode her pony Macaroni in the White House grounds. According to Neil Diamond, Caroline and Macaroni inspired the song Sweet Caroline, which shows how much they were at the forefront of JFK's public relations. 5 days before Caroline's sixth birthday, on November 22, 1963, JFK was shot in Dallas and died. Maud Shaw took Caroline and John Jr. to their grandmother Janet Bouvier's house, where Bouvier insisted Shaw should tell Caroline, so that evening when they returned to the White House, she did. 2 weeks later, they moved out of the White House and back to Georgetown, but their home in Georgetown soon attracted a lot of tourist attention, and the following year they moved away to New York. The family remained very famous and very politically engaged. Caroline's closest father figure, her uncle Robert, was a presidential candidate in 1968, when he too was assassinated. At this point, Jackie feared for her children's safety, saying, "If they're killing Kennedys, then my children are targets." A year later, Jackie married a Greek shipping tycoon and moved her family to his private island, Scorpios. Caroline, however, attended private schools in New York, so still spent significant time in the US. As an adult, she worked in the Metropolitan Museum of Art, trained as an attorney, and married and had children of her own. She also maintained an interest in public life and politics, most notably working on Barack Obama's presidential campaign, and serving as an ambassador to Japan during his second term. She resigned shortly before Donald Trump was sworn into office, and currently serves on the board of directors for the Boeing Company. Her father's assassination remains one of the most famous events in world history, but the impact of the Kennedy family has been far greater than the individual actions of JFK. Caroline's work during Obama's campaign and administration is a significant part of the family's legacy. The next family in the White House were also no strangers to tragedy. Lyndon Baines and Lady Bird Johnson had suffered three miscarriages before the birth of their daughter Linda Bird, who they named after themselves, in March 1944. They had their second child, Lucy Baines, in 1948. Lyndon B. Johnson ran for the Democratic nomination in the 1960 election and was invited by JFK to be his running mate, becoming vice president. When JFK was assassinated in 1963, Johnson was quickly removed from Dallas and sworn in as president on board Air Force One. Linda was 19 when her father became president. She had an active romantic life during her father's term in office, which attracted a deal of press attention. She was at first engaged to Bernard Rosenbach. Then in 1966, she began dating Hollywood actor George Hamilton. In the aftermath of JFK's assassination, and due to the high profile of both partners, the couple became one of the first to be protected by their own Secret Service agents. In 1967, Linda married Chuck Robb, a Marine Corps veteran who was working at that time as a White House social aide. The wedding took place in the East Wing of the White House. Both Linda and Chuck have political careers, as well as raising three daughters together. In recent years, Linda has represented her mother at the funerals of other previous presidents. Otherwise, she's been fairly quiet in public spheres. The younger sister Lucy was 16 when her father suddenly became president. On the day that JFK was assassinated, she was in a Spanish class, where she heard the news of the shooting and was unsure about her father's safety until Secret Service agents turned up at the campus. As a teenager, she began attending Georgetown University's School of Nursing and Health Studies. At 19, in August 1966, Lucy married Air National Guardsman Patrick Nugent. They went big. The wedding was at the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in Washington, D.C., with over 700 guests. It was broadcast on television to 55 million viewers and featured on the cover of Life magazine. At this point, though, she left nursing school, as at the time the school didn't allow married students to attend. Lyndon B. Johnson did not run for a second term. In 1969, he was succeeded by Republican Richard Nixon. Lucy had four children with Nugent, but the marriage was annulled in 1979. She married Ian J. Chirpin in 1984 and maintained a fairly private adult life since. Lyndon B. Johnson did not run for a second term. In 1969, he was succeeded by Republican Richard Nixon. Lucy had four children with Nugent, but the marriage was annulled in 1979. She married Ian J. Turpin in 1984 and has maintained a fairly private adult life. The romantic relationships the Johnson sisters formed during their father's presidency seem to have been the centre of the press's focus on them. And despite Linda's political career, their political roles both during and after his administration have been less active than others. Trisha and Julie Nixon have had a much bigger public role, from the length of their skirts to the legacy of Watergate. Trisha Nixon was born in California in 1946. She grew up in the public eye as the daughter of a prominent congressman and later vice president. Her younger sister Julie was born in 1948 in Washington, D.C. At their father's second inauguration as vice president, he suggested to Julie that she turn her head for the photographs to hide a black eye she had sustained in a sledding accident. Her father launched an unsuccessful presidential campaign for 1960, which took a toll on the family. Julie later told interviewers that her mother was battered by what happened in his electoral defeat. Because she felt the election was stolen, she hated pictures of that night because it was the first and only time she ever lost her self-control. Nixon also stood and lost the election for governor of California in 1962. After this, the family travelled in Europe and moved to New York, where Nixon became a senior partner of a law firm. Trisha was officially entered into society at the International Debutante Ball in New York in 1964, where her escort was Edward Cox. She graduated from Boston College, with her father serving as a guest speaker at her graduation ceremony. She was 22 when her father became president. She accompanied her father on campaign stops and state visits, though speaking very little to the press. Nixon spoke of his daughters as representatives of a more traditional, modest culture which he wished to promote. In one lecture, he said that, "Both Trisha and Julie are fortunate that they have the kind of figures that permit them to wear miniskirts, but my advice to girls is, they shouldn't feel sad at hems coming down." In an article for Ladies' Home Journal, he wrote that Trisha doesn't drink or smoke. On the other hand, she has a great time, she swings, referring to a popular dance style of the time. Whether the girls would have agreed, we can't really know. But certainly Trisha did like to dance. On the 10th of May 1969, she hosted a masked ball in the East Room of the White House with 450 guests, including Lyndon and Lucy Johnson and many sons and daughters of political officials. Popular bands, The Temptations and The Turtles, performed, and Trisha danced mostly with her escort, Representative Barry Goldwater Jr. By the end of 1970, rumours were spreading that Trisha was going to marry Edward Cox, who at this point was a student at Harvard Law School. Anonymous friends supposedly told the newspapers that the couple might elope. Their engagement was announced formally by the president in 1971 at a St. Patrick's Day gala he was hosting. The following day, Trisha conducted her first press conference since her father had become president, wearing a white dress and sitting in a large green chair. She told the press, "Eddie is my first and last love. We'd like it to be on the small side, with our family and close friends, sort of like last night." On June 12th, they married in the Rose Garden at the White House. In November 1972, Trisha's father was re-elected for a second term. On July 17th, five men were caught breaking into the Democratic Party headquarters at the Watergate complex. The Washington Post picked up on a connection to the Nixon administration, but the scandal was dismissed by Nixon as mere politics. Nevertheless, 48 officials were convicted of wrongdoing in attempts to sabotage Democrats. In July 1973, Alexander Butterfield, a White House aide, testified under oath to Congress that Nixon had recorded his conversations and phone calls in the Oval Office for a secret taping system. The tapes were subpoenaed by the Watergate special counsel, but Nixon only provided transcripts of the conversations, citing executive privilege. One transcript had a section of over 18 minutes missing. The scandal continued until August 1974, when Nixon resigned. It had attracted attention across the world. Nixon and his wife returned to their home in California, while Trisha and Edward have since maintained a relatively private life in New York. Julie attended Smith College in Massachusetts, where she got to know David Eisenhower, who was at the same time studying at Amherst College a few miles away. In 1966, she officially entered into society at the International Debutante Ball in New York like her sister, with Eisenhower as her escort. They became engaged in 1967 and married in 1968 at the Marble Collegiate College in New York, preferring not to have the publicity of a White House wedding. After graduating from Smith, she did a master's degree in education at the Catholic University of America. From 1973 to 75, she served as assistant managing editor of the Saturday Evening Post and helped establish a book division for its parent company, Curtis Publishing. During this time, Julie wrote the book Eye on Nixon, full of photographs of her father's first administration. After the news of the Watergate break-in, Julie took on the press. Journalist Nora Ephron wrote, "In the months since the Watergate hearings began, she, Julie, has become her father's first lady in practice, if not in fact. She gave a total of 138 interviews across the country, once telling reporters that her father had considered resigning over Watergate, but that the family had talked him out of it. Nevertheless, just before noon on August 9th, 1974, Julie stood behind her father while he gave his goodbye speech to the White House staff. Julie and David settled in Pennsylvania. In 2002, Julie and Trisha got into a public dispute over the management of funds for the Richard Nixon Library and Birthplace Foundation, which both sisters worked to create and run. Due in large part to Julie's advocating, the Nixon Library became part of the National Archives system in 2007. In spite of her family's history of supporting Republicans, Julie donated $2,300 to Barack Obama in the 2008 Democratic primary race against Hillary Clinton. The Nixon sisters negotiated the press's interest in their love lives, the national scandal that embroiled their family, and a fast-changing political climate in the US, remaining highly engaged and highly influential, even in recent years. The next girl in the White House was Susan Ford. Her father was Nixon's vice president, and he automatically became president himself when Nixon resigned after Watergate. Very soon after, Susan's mother Betty underwent a mastectomy for breast cancer. Her openness about cancer in the press led to a spike in diagnosis from self-examination, called the Betty Ford blip. At this time, Susan was 17. She assumed the role of White House hostess while her mother was recovering from surgery. She later supported her mother's progressive social work at Betty Ford Center, and became a photojournalist and co-wrote the novel Double Exposure, A First Daughter Mystery, set in a contemporary version of the White House and dramatising the position of a presidential first girl. Amy Carter was only 9 when her family moved into the White House in 1977. Her nanny from 1971 until the end of her father's presidency was Mary Prince, a black woman who had previously been wrongfully convicted of murder. Amy managed to have a lot of fun in the White House, from roller skating in the East Room to hosting slumber parties in her treehouse on the lawn, with Secret Service monitoring. President Carter referred to Amy in his speeches, including claiming in a debate with Ronald Reagan that Amy had identified control of nuclear arms as the most important issue for the 1980 election. Amy was a focus for the press, receiving criticism after she was seen reading a book during a state dinner, and apparently replying simply with, "No," when a reporter asked if she had a message for the children of America. After her father's presidency, Amy became increasingly engaged with politics, and particularly with anti-apartheid activism in the 1980s and 90s. She was arrested after blocking the removal of protesters opposing CIA recruitment at the University of Massachusetts Amherst in 1986. The protesters opposed the activities of the CIA in Nicaragua at the time, including supplying contrasts with money made by selling arms to Iranian terrorist groups. Carter and 14 others were tried on charges of trespass and disorderly conduct in a highly publicised trial in Northampton. The defence attorney Leonard Winglis successfully made the case that the defendants had acted out of necessity, or in the words of Massachusetts law, legitimate purpose, a legal exception that permits people to do things like entering another person's property in order to extinguish a fire. The idea that stopping the actions of the CIA was a legitimate purpose added to the pressure building against the agency's actions. Furthermore, the precedent set by this case has helped to empower activists to protest legitimately against other injustices. Since the mid-90s, she has maintained a lower profile, continuing to advocate for human rights and diplomacy through her work for the Carter Center. She and her husband also had a son, Hugo, in 1999. Now we skip forward to 1993, and one of the most famous first girls, Chelsea Clinton, the only child of Bill and Hillary. She was born in Arkansas in 1980. Her name was inspired by her parents' visit to the Chelsea neighborhood of London during a Christmas vacation. She was born while her father was state governor and toured with her parents on the campaign trail from the age of two. She learned to read and write quickly and was encouraged to be aware of and engage with the news. At the age of five, concerned about President Reagan's plans to visit Bitburg Military Cemetery on an official visit to Germany, Chelsea wrote to him. The letter read, "Dear Mr. President, I have seen the Sound of Music. The Nazis don't look like very nice people. Please don't go to their cemetery. Sincerely, Chelsea Clinton." She also recounts that she had spent her favourite heart and rainbow stickers as a gesture of goodwill. Chelsea attended public schools in Little Rock and skipped the third grade. Outside her studies, she enjoyed sports and particularly ballet. Throughout her early life, her parents were increasingly significant political figures. In 1987, the First Lady vetoed Hillary's potential candidacy for the governorship in Arkansas. And despite media speculation that he would run for presidency, Bill decided to stay on as governor for a second term, during which he launched his presidential campaign. The campaign was tumultuous, with recordings released from his affair with actress Jennifer Flowers in 1977, questions of conflict raised over the role of Hillary's law firm, and Bill's return to Arkansas to oversee the controversial execution of Ricky Ray Rector. Bill won the election, though, and the family moved into the White House. The Secret Service gave Chelsea the codename Energy. She was 12 at the time. Following Jackie Kennedy's advice, Hillary asked the press only to cover Chelsea during her participation in official events. Her parents were keen for her to spend her teenage years with as little scrutiny as possible. Margaret Truman also wrote to the New York Times about the damage they might inflict if Chelsea became a focus for the press. Mostly, the press complied. But Saturday Night Live and radio host Rush Limbaugh both mocked her appearance, prompting an apology note from SNL cast member Mike Myers. The popularisation of digital cameras also made things harder for Chelsea, as now even members of the public photographed her while she was out. She was very much a celebrity at the time, and is still a significant part of cultural memory in the West. The British comedy Derry Girls recently featured Bill and Hillary's visit to Northern Ireland, and for its teenage protagonists, Chelsea is very much the focus. Her parents removed her from the public school system and placed her in the prestigious Sidwell Friends School, where staff and her fellow students refused to discuss her publicly. Her choice of college was covered extensively by the press, and as she prepared to get to Stanford, her mother wrote an open letter asking the press to let her have time to herself as she adjusted to adulthood. Chelsea arrived at Stanford in a motorcade with her parents, Secret Service agents, and almost 250 journalists. For her security, bulletproof glass was installed in her dorm windows and surveillance cameras were placed in the hallways. Secret Service agents in plain clothes lived in her dorm. In 1998, details emerged of Bill Clinton's relationship with 22-year-old intern Monica Lewinsky. He was already subject to a sexual harassment lawsuit from former Arkansas employee Paula Jones. And after he denied the affair with Lewinsky in a deposition for Jones's case, he was impeached on charges of perjury and obstruction of justice, though he was eventually acquitted of those charges. During that last year of her father's presidency, Chelsea assumed some White House hostess responsibilities while her mother was campaigning for the US Senate, travelling on overseas trips and attending state dinners. She continued her studies, writing her senior thesis on the Good Friday Agreement, in which her father had played a key role. She went on to obtain master's and doctorate degrees in international relations and public health, rose through the ranks of two consultancy firms, worked as a special correspondent at NBC, and was vice president of the Clinton Foundation. She took an active part in her mother's campaigns for presidential nomination in 2008 and the election in 2016. In 2011, she wrote her first of five non-fiction books for children, encouraging political engagement and girls' empowerment. From her childhood, Chelsea was clearly expected to play a certain role. In an article published on Chelsea's 16th birthday, Roxanne Roberts, writing for the Washington Post, explicitly referred to Chelsea having to tackle the job of first daughter. The struggle between her public role and a private childhood was no longer something subtly negotiated, but a subject explicitly and widely debated. For Chelsea, the pressure seems to have been well managed, and she has clearly taken the role and influence her parents conferred to her to heart. Being able to pursue her education with some level of privacy and security has enabled her to develop her own role in public life as an adult as well. Barbara and Jenna Bush, however, were already in college when their father, George W. Bush, became president. In the summer of 2001, both twins were charged with possession of alcohol under the age of 21 after buying drinks at a chain restaurant. The incident drew attention of a mixed sort, such as a USA Today article interviewing students across Austin about their opinions of it, but still acknowledging that the girls had been thrust into the public spotlight for transgressions that likely would not have been noticed if they involved any of her fellow students. After their graduations in 2004, both sisters joined their father's campaign for re-election, including giving a joint introduction for their father to the Republican National Convention, where they joked about their experiences in the press. Though they introduced their dad, unlike their Republican relatives, neither are members of any political party. During her father's second term, Barbara interned for an international pediatric AIDS program with the Beighton College of Medicine, before taking a job in educational programming at the Smithsonian Museum of Design. Jenna became a public school teacher, and towards the end of her father's second term, she took a sabbatical to intern with UNICEF's Educational Policy Department in Panama. She wrote a book about her experiences during the internship, Anna's Story, A Journey of Hope, published in 2007, with her share of the profits going to UNICEF. In 2008, the sisters were co-founders of the Global Health Corps, creating fellowships for diverse groups of young professionals to work on international health equity. In the same year, Jenna married her partner, Henry Chase Hager, at her parents' ranch in Texas. Their relationship had first become public when Hager had accompanied her at White House dinner for Charles and Camilla, the Prince of Wales and Duchess of Cornwall, in 2005. The couple now have three children, Miller, Poppy, and Hal. After Bush, the US had its first black president, and with him, its first black first family, including Malia and Sasha. Malia was born in 1998, and Natasha, known as Sasha, was born in 2001. Both in Chicago, while their father was an Illinois state senator. Both sisters attended a private preparatory school in Chicago and kept busy schedules of music and sports lessons. In 2007, Barack announced his candidacy for the presidency in Springfield, Illinois, with Michelle, Malia, and Sasha on stage beside him. Sasha was just five. He was elected in 2008, and his inauguration on January 20th, 2009, set the record for attendance at any Washington event, as well as drawing press attention from around the world. Being homesick from school at the time, I was one of those watching through the BBC. In DC, Malia and Sasha went to Sidwell Friends School like many presidents' children before them. During his campaign, Barack had spoken about his promise to get his daughters a rescue puppy to bring with them to the White House. Senator Ted Kennedy gave the family a puppy, which the girls named Beau. The White House referred to Beau as the first dog, extending the first family roles into the animal kingdom. They adopted a second dog named Sunny in 2013. On the 4th of July 2008, the whole family did an interview with Access Hollywood. The 4th of July is also Malia's birthday, and at the time the family were campaigning in Montana. While the girls had appeared at campaign events before, they had never spoken to the press. Moreover, the interview was quite informal and discussed aspects of the girls' lives and their relationships with their father on the road. The following week, Barak told the press it had been a spur-of-the-moment action that the family would not repeat for the sake of protecting the girls. This set the tone for his presidency, with Milia and Sasha strongly guarded from the global attention focused on the family. Michelle was a very active First Lady, and Barak himself took a strong role in public soft power activities, reducing the focus that might otherwise have fallen on the First Daughters. Nevertheless, they appeared at state dinners and public events, and as they reached their teenage years, the press paid increasing attention to their fashion choices and behaviour. Michelle and Malia have both spoken openly, in Michelle's memoir and Netflix show Becoming, about the stress that they were under. In Michelle's words,
"We act like it doesn't take a toll on us, but you do not understand what toll it takes on the people around the president."
Malia also says,
"No longer facing that same scrutiny, being able to let all of that leave your mind creates so much more space."
As with previous First Girls, press coverage of Malia and Sasha included sexist criticism, often very inappropriate for their age. But in their case, this was compounded by racism. The rise of social media during Barak's presidency meant that online commentators were able to set up fake accounts imitating them, and to publish derogatory comments, including racial slurs, with less scrutiny. News sites, including Fox News, even repeated fabricated stories about the girls, no doubt intended to discredit a black family who have dared to hold power. Just a quick search online will show you the extent of the hostility they've faced, but it will also show the admiration, love, and excitement of many people, particularly young people, who have been able to watch the family's journey as a symbol of real hope. Barak's presidency saw many new landmarks in social progress in the US. In his second term, his administration pushed for the legalization of same-sex marriage across the US, with a key ruling from the Supreme Court coming on June 26, 2015. That night, the White House was lit up in the colors of the Pride flag, and the crowds of people celebrating in Washington, D.C. gathered by the gates to see it, while government staff filled the driveway in their own celebrations. In Becoming, Michelle has also recounted how she and Malia decided to go out, slipping past the security team through a loading door, to stand in a corner out of view and absorb the atmosphere. As a high school student, Malia spent her summers working in TV studios and as an intern at the US Embassy in Madrid. In 2016, both girls accompanied their mother and grandmother on a Let Girls Learn peace initiative in Liberia, Morocco, and Spain, meeting with Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, the first elected female head of state in Africa, and participating on a panel with Frida Pinto, Meryl Streep, and Aisha Sese. Malia then travelled in Bolivia and Peru, followed by an internship with the Weinstein Company in early 2017, before beginning a degree at Harvard. During her winter break this year, she spent time in London, apparently with her British boyfriend, Rory Farquharson. In August 2016, Sasha began working at Nancy's Seafood Restaurant in Martha's Vineyard. She graduated from Sidwell Friends in 2019 and is currently in her first year at the University of Michigan. The future for the Obama family is still developing. Malia and Sasha clearly support Michelle's commitment to working with young people. So as they continue to grow, there may be much more that they choose to do with the platform they have been given as First Girls. The incumbent president took office in 2017. His two daughters, Ivanka and Tiffany, were 35 and 23 at that time. The younger Tiffany has played a smaller role in the presidency so far. In 2016, she completed her undergraduate degree. Like the Bush sisters, she is a member of Kappa Alpha Theta sorority. She made public appearances during the presidential campaign, including addressing the Republican National Convention, expressing support for her father. In 2017, she began attending Georgetown Law School. She's also a frequent poster on Instagram and a member of a socialite group referred to in the press as the Snappack. Her older half-sister Ivanka had previously worked in modelling, run her own line of fashion products, worked within her father's businesses, appeared in his TV shows, and released self-help books. She was closely involved with her father's presidential campaign, and upon her father's election, she resigned from her position at the Trump Organization. She fulfilled the role of First Lady while her husband's wife was still in New York with their son. Within 2 months, she was appointed as a government employee, with the title First Daughter and Senior Advisor to the President. This is the most formalized acknowledgement of a first girl in US history, although the role she has played may be reminiscent of Elle Roosevelt's work, with a clear focus on international representation. She and her chief of staff were invited by Angela Merkel to attend a G20 Women's Summit in Berlin. During her appearance on the panel, she was asked about the meaning of her role as first daughter and spoke about her father as a champion of families. These latter comments provoked hissing from the audience. Donald Trump has been accused of dozens of sexual assaults, and during his presidential campaign, a recording was released in which he describes taking actions which would constitute sexual assault. He is staunchly against abortion rights and frequently speaks demeaningly about women. The day after his inauguration, a worldwide women's march was held, with the march from Washington streamed live across the globe. Ivanka refuses to speak about these issues, telling one reporter it was inappropriate for him to mention to her the sexual assault accusations against her father. In the autumn of 2017, she led a delegation to India focusing on support for women's entrepreneurship. In June 2019, she was involved in her father's talks with the supreme leader of North Korea, Kim Jong-un, in a Korean demilitarized zone. Though her public role seems to be largely focused on international relations and women's empowerment, many considered her to also have strong influence with her father. In Michael Wolff's book, Fire and Fury, he claims that Ivanka and her husband have agreed that should the opportunity arise, she would be the one to run for president. Ivanka Trump is the eldest of the women we've discussed in this series. While at Girl Museum we usually focus on girls, it's impossible to understand how the role of the United States' first girl has developed without acknowledging the impact of this current administration. Ivanka's role is more formal than that of any first girl before her. She is an official first daughter and a senior advisor to her father. Where Elle Roosevelt was criticized for distracting her father with her opinions, Ivanka is viewed as a valuable aide and potentially a successor. She exercises an authority and a breadth of activity that society did not permit to any first girl before her. Nevertheless, the negative view of her father's attitude towards women, and therefore of her role as an advocate for women on a global stage, may have a negative impact on the role of first girls in administrations to come. And while any person elected to office is part of a family whose lives will be impacted by the role, it is worth remembering that we elect an individual. The position of a first girl is an unelected one, defined by a relationship, usually to a man. Over the past centuries, the US has seen some remarkable girls using and shaping that role, expanding the influence and the opportunities it can offer, and negotiating the difficulties that have been raised under the world's attention. The power of political engagement amongst young girls is evident, but in years to come it might be better harnessed through different roles. Girls should no longer be kept to the roles of first lady and first daughter, but instead simply first, premiers, presidents, and elected officials of all kinds. If girls can do so much in unelected roles, just imagine what they could achieve in office. It's been fascinating for me to learn more about the history of girls in the White House, and I hope it's made interesting listening for you too. Be sure to tune in to our next episode on August 20th on young girls in advanced education. Finally, please help to support future production of Girls Speak by visiting us at www.girlmuseum.org and clicking donate. Thank you and have a wonderful day.
We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Be sure to tune into our next podcast, More Than Pretty, where we interview Kuriya Bashi. Finally, please help support future production of Girl Speak by visiting us at www.girlmuseum.org and clicking donate. Thank you and have a wonderful day.